Now, from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJR-FM Sports Headlines.
Headlines at 3 o'clock, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com. The Kraken looking for their fourth straight win tonight. They take on the Wild in Minnesota. Face off at 5, pregame with Mike Benton, 4:30, right here on 93.3 KJR-FM. Defenseman Riker Evans, you heard Ian talk about in the last segment. Riker, the Kraken second-round pick behind Matty Beniers, has signed a contract with the club. The other Minnesota team, the T-Wolves, blew a 26-point lead and 21-point lead with under a minute left in the third quarter and lost to Memphis. Memphis takes a 2-1 series lead. The Grizz outscored the T-Wolves 42-12 in the last 13 minutes of the game. It was the largest fourth-quarter collapse in the history of the NBA playoffs. Ja Morant, first triple-double in Grizz playoff history. Mavs took a 2-1 series lead despite missing Luka Doncic. Jalen Brunson had another great night, 31 points. He's averaging over 30 in the series. Warriors cruise to another win. Klay, Steph, Jordan Poole combining for 80 points. Poole in the series shooting 67%, including 13 of 22 from three. He has scored 86 points. And barring a setback, Ben Simmons will make his Nets debut on Monday for game number 4. Let's get the show started.
And now, two goofy, wacko, out-of-touch homers.
Just brutal radio.
Just horrible.
Live.
41 yards.
From Elliott Bay.
Can you feel it now?
This is Softy and Dick.
Hot off the presses, Jackson Feltz. Have you read your inbox in the last 2 minutes or so?
Not in the last two
Hot
minutes.
Hot off the presses.
What do we got?
I've got the 93.3 KJR-FM 2022 NFL Draft Coverage Plan.
Oh, let's go.
Right here.
Let's go.
In my hot little hand, and I'm just going to break the news for everybody. I mean, it really started, it's a week-long celebration, as it always is for the draft, but really, in earnest, our draft coverage starts on Wednesday, the day before the first round. We're going to have a 12-man roundtable in the morning show at 8 o'clock that day on Wednesday. Ian's going to do his NFL draft preview show from 1 to 3 on Wednesday, including Mike Holmgren at 2 o'clock. And then the Mahler-Millen mock draft, year number 74, I think it is, for the Mahler-Millen mock draft with specialty guest Commissioner Cam Cleland will be joining us. That is going to be my favorite day of next week's work schedule.
Now, why is that?
Well, because you notice it doesn't say the Mahler-Fain Millen mock draft. It says the Mahler-Millen mock draft. And in the past, I've been called in to be the commissioner as well. Yep. No. Cam Cleland is going to be commissioner. My job is to get there, I don't know, an hour ahead of time, hit balls at Riverbend, maybe even play a few holes, walk into the bar, and just enjoy myself for three and a half hours on Wednesday. That's my job on Wednesday, so I'm looking very much forward to the Mahler-Millen mock draft. And then day one of the draft on Thursday, obviously the draft starts at 5 o'clock our time. Ian's going to be at the VMAC. The 12-man draft show, that does include me, by the way. I tried to get that day off, but it didn't work. It says Softy, Fain, Hugh, and Holmgren from the VMAC for the afternoon show. And then Ian's going to come back on, host a little half-hour ditty with Puck and Rang, 12-man draft show from 7:30 to 9 with Puck, Hugh, and Rang from the VMAC. So we're going to be live from the VMAC on day one of the draft through 9 o'clock that night. And then day two of the draft on Friday, Holmgren on the morning show, Ian from the VMAC with Rob Rang, 12-man draft show again from 3 to 6:30 with Softy, myself, Hugh, and Holmgren. And the draft show continues that evening until at least 7:30. I mean, Puck and Hugh are on until nine again that night.
Yeah, 9 again.
I mean, we're just going all day, all night, all week. So
you know what's going to be the best part of this, Dick? It's the fact that not only do we have the Seahawks picking at number 9 right now, scheduled to pick at number 9, but it means we're going to have a lot of action in those 2 days, in those hours. So we're going to be like right at 5 p.m., we're going to be immediately looking at who goes in these top 8. We have the NFL previews coming up with Paul and with Sharon at 3:30 today. We are going to be following along every single second of this because it's going to relate to what the Seahawks do at 9.
Exactly. And there is that minuscule chance, and I mean minuscule, because John Schneider is the general manager of the Seahawks and not some other guy, Joe Douglas or whatever. There is a minuscule chance that he might just shock everybody and move up to six.
Oh,
seven.
I thought you were about to say a minuscule chance that he actually stays at nine and actually selects somebody at nine. I think that there is a negative percentage chance, and I know this isn't scientifically accurate, there's a negative percentage chance that the Seahawks actually go up in this draft.
What has a better chance? The Seahawks go up in this draft, or Julio Rodriguez will not get called out again this season on a pitch 6 inches outside the zone?
The answer to that is clearly the Seahawks going up in this
draft. Oh, my God. I mean, it honestly is the topic of the day, not because we lost the game because Julio, we had a great shot to win that game at that particular time if Julio gets to walk the first.
Well, and Tom Murphy, what are you doing? What are you doing?
I know, and there was other things, so I'm not saying we lost the game because Julio got called out on a third strike, but I'm watching that, and I'm seeing later at bats from Mariner hitters that are walking to first on the exact same pitch Julio Rodriguez got called out on. I'm like, it's got to be something. It's got to be a rite of passage. It's not an accident that a 19-year-old kid is the one, and a high-profile 19-year-old kid is the one that has been called out. I trust Kevin Shockey and his statistics. I didn't realize the number was this high. I thought it was like six. Eight times. Eight strikeouts this year in 2 weeks of baseball. He almost has a strikeout a game that he shouldn't have.
Right.
And it's really, really bothersome. And it's kind of a microcosm of what has been a really weird, weird year for the Mariners thus far. I mean, last night, weird. You get a 5-run lead. Your percentage chance of win was 94% in the first inning when you were up 5-0. It was at 94%. Do you have something for
it's
me
there? Really
you're
looking weird that,
strange at
it's
me
really
right
weird
now.
That we are in the middle of this conversation while apparently Julio Rodriguez is actually speaking right now to some reporters. This is off of our friend Curtis Crabtree, his Twitter account. He said that Rodriguez is talking about the tough calls he's had at the plate. He said he doesn't want to get away from his disciplined approach. Quote, "I'm just going to stay true to myself."
And that
what goes around comes around. So
I think that's the exact thing he needs to do.
And
it's obvious that Scott Service is pushing control the zone, right? He wants to shrink the strike zone on pitchers. And you would hope eventually, like Julio says, what comes around goes around and he'll get some luck as well. I mean, that wasn't the only bad luck he had. How about scalding a baseball 109 miles an hour to left center field and having the center fielder dive and
it was a fabulous catch.
But Julio did everything he possibly could in that at bat and hit it about as hard as you can hit a ball. So it's just been a weird season so far. You had a 5-run lead yesterday before they even recorded an offensive out and lost. Marco Gonzalez has allowed 13 runs this year, 5 earned.
Now that right
five
there is,
earned
is very interesting.
13 runs that he's earned. So his ERA looks good, but the eye test does not look good for Marco Gonzalez thus far. Jared Kelenic's got 2 homers off the foul pole. If those two go foul, he's 4-for-39 with no home runs and 1 RBI. Fortunately for the team, both of those did hit the foul pole. On the positive side, you've outscored the Astros 18-7 in a 3-game series with them. At least 6 players and coaches have been out with COVID, which you could have used Pauly Sewald last night. There's no question about that. And yet, here they are, still over 500, 2-1-1 in your four series so far, 6-2-1 in the last 9 series if you date back to September.
Yep.
So winning consistent baseball. We talked yesterday at Jimmy's about how they were 38-22, so now 38-23 in their last 61 baseball games.
Wow.
I mean, and I threw the poll out yesterday, Jackson, if you put a sizable investment on the Mariners at plus 475 to win the division or put a sizable investment on the Astros at minus 200, threw that poll out, a landslide win for the Mariners.
I mean, easily, because
80-20 was the results of the poll.
And I think you guys were talking to Brett Boone yesterday about this as well. It's on the podcast page after we're off today for people to check out. And Brett kind of talked about it. Like, listen, the Astros have taken a clear step back. It is very obvious
very
if you've watched a single Astros game. They had the Perfecto going against them by Shohei Ohtani, who's a good pitcher, but still, this is a team that's having very, very hard time hitting balls right now. So if you can catch them on their down year and you're catching their AL West on potentially a down year, then yeah, it's an easy bet for the Mariners to take the West. I mean, I can't understand at all why the over-under was, 84.5?
Yeah.
How the heck is the Mariners' over-under win total entering this year 84.5, considering all the hype around them? And yes, we have young guys that are going to be building up. But clearly, if you're catching the division on a bad year, 84.5 should be easy.
I've put my hard-earned money on them winning the division. So I'm invested in the Mariners winning the division.
You threw it all out there. You're already all in
Softy,
on the division.
Softy's put his hard-earned investment like he did last year on the over 78, right?
That was the easiest bet ever.
He had that one in like August.
Yeah.
You know? And so, hey, let's win some money on these Mariners, no question. I mean, the offense obviously is a concern, and yet when you look at the big picture, I couldn't believe when I saw it today. Do you realize the Mariners are middle of the pack in batting average in the American League?
That's good to hear.
And they're hitting .222. But that is what offense just continues to plummet in Major League Baseball. The Mariners are hitting .222. They're yet middle of the pack. And there are teams under .200 right now in the American League as a team. That's unheard of, even 5 years ago, let alone 15 or 20 years ago.
I just decided to look up the American League run differential statistic right now, and we obviously were in not a very good spot for the run differential. That's why we invented fun differential last year. The fun differential is still very high for this team. But the run differential is +8 right now. That's better than every team in the American League East. That's weirdly only the third best in the West right now, in the AL West. But like, our run differential is positive, and not only like +1, it's positive in a nice margin right now.
They're a better baseball team than they were last year, and that goes back to your point about the Astros. The Astros are clearly a worse baseball team. Now, have the two ships passed in the night, or do we have to wait until 2023? I don't know, but like we said yesterday, with a week left to go in the season, the Mariners were only 3.5 games behind the Astros. So let's just do some deduction here. They were 3.5 games behind the Astros last year when they were a worse team and the Astros were a better team.
Right.
Now the Astros are worse. The Mariners are better. What does that mean? And the Astros run differential, by the way, even though in this early going, negative.
Right. Exactly.
Below zero. So, and, you know, we've got into this discussion. It's been many, many times Softy and I have gotten into discussion about, you know, should you have spent more money in the offseason? And I understand the urge. I mean, my God, we haven't been to the playoffs in 20 years. I understand the urge to just go. Let's go. Let's get players. I mean, yeah, that's, you know, God bless them. That's
totally
kind of the Softy way, right? It's it's the let's go. and we love them for that. Now, the players that we looked at were Marcus Semien, Trevor Story, Carlos Correa, Chris Bryant. Those were the four primary free agents that everybody was talking about. The Mariners should go get. Now, again, small sample size. But we saw Marcus Semien over the last three games. He's hitting .180 with no home runs. Making boku bucks. Taking up a spot potentially from a young player. Trevor Story is hitting .235 with no home runs. Carlos Correa, we saw him. He's hitting .196 with one home run. And Chris Bryant is the only one of the four that is actually hitting well. He's hitting very well, .349. Has no power, though. No home runs for Chris Bryant. Those four players have one home run total and are hitting combined .240.
Dick, really quick, can you give the numbers on Semien would have played second base, right? If he came over.
Yes.
I think. So can you, one more time.
.180, no home runs. How's Adam Frazier doing?
Adam Frazier currently batting .283 with an OPS of .741 with no home runs, but he has seven RBIs. So you tell me what's the better money.
I don't have a problem at all with DePoto not dipping into that free agent class. I mean, I said it before the year. I'm going to say it again right now. I want to see what he has built and see it come to fruition. And if we find ourselves 2 months down the road, 3 months down the road on July 15th, which we will be in the race, period, end of story. They will be in the race. Division race, wild card race, don't worry about it. They will be in the race on July 15th. And then we have enough sample size to say, you know, Julio just ain't ready. You know, Kelenic just ain't ready. Those guys just ain't ready. Hey, we got a hole here. Or, hey, there was an injury here. We need to fill a hole here. That is when you go out, you make your trades. That's why you got this awesome farm system. You make your trades. You evaluate it then at the end of the year. If you need to fill in the free agents then, that's when you do it. I mean, building rosters has kind of been on my mind recently. And because we've talked about it a lot, not only with the Mariners in the offseason, we're talking about with the Seahawks, obviously, because they're retooling or whatever R word you want to describe what the Mariners are doing. We've talked about it ad nauseum with Mike Hopkins, who has just decided, I'm not going to recruit high school players anymore. I'm just going to bring in eight new guys and then let those eight guys leave and bring eight more new guys in. So we've talked about it then, and I am a big fan of kind of the old school method. And what's good about the old school method is kind of coming back to show that it works. Mm-hmm. And I'll give you some examples. We just saw the Kansas basketball team win the national championship, right? Leading scorer in All-American, Egbaji, signed with them in 2018. Two leading rebounders, Jalen Wilson, David McCormick, have been with them for multiple years. Christian Braun, DeJuan Harris, Mitch Lightfoot, basically all their guys, most of their guys, because there's one big exception, most of their guys, Kansas recruited them out of high school. And then Bill Self said, I read an article about this. Bill Self said, we're lacking a little offensive electricity at guard. So I'm going to go find myself one. And he got Remy Martin out of Arizona State. And the guy fit in perfectly. So I'm not saying that transfers are bad. I'm not saying that free agents are bad. I'm saying that transfers, when acquired after a lot of thought and really thinking about how they fit into your team, can be great. Free agents like the Seahawks, perfect example, 2013. Let's go get Cliff Averill.
Yeah.
We don't need a guy. We don't need a guy to come in and rock the boat. We don't need a big time, you know, multi-million dollar free agent to come in for everybody to look at. No, we need somebody to help our pass rush. I'm going to go get Cliff Averill. Right. We want somebody over in the middle of the defensive line. Let's take a shot on Michael Bennett. We don't need to go get the guy that thinks he is the greatest thing since sliced bread because he's on the top of everybody's free agency, because chemistry means something in sports, I think.
Yeah, it does. Now, here's the interesting part, because if the Mariners, I understand the criticism for wanting to spend more money. I think it's a very fair criticism considering everything we've been hearing from Jerry DePoto and people in the organization for the last number of years, which was that this offseason was going to be the offseason, the big spending offseason. Yes, they spent. No, they did not spend as much as we all thought they would. But now the attention turns to where we're going to be at on July 15th, right? On that date, if the Mariners are within three games of the division or five games of the division, or if they're leading the division, then the question becomes, all right, you've said, Jerry, that you have the ability, and John Stanton told you guys at Jimmy's last week, we have the ability to go spend money during the season. We, you know, didn't spend it during the offseason. We have that money, right? So, okay, if you're in contention on July 15th, go spend that money. Go make that trade. Go buy that guy, the big free agent that you didn't get. Put him at the five spot in your order, because that's going to be the moment. And if they are in contention, and listen, unless they're leading the division by like 15 games, then they don't need that guy. But if they are in contention and this is going to be a battle down the stretch with a Houston or an LA, wherever, you got to make that deal. And if they don't, that's when my head's going
to
explode.
Don't you think that, I mean, the Minnesota Twins signed Carlos Correa to a one-year contract, absolutely thinking that, hey, if we're not in it on July 15th, We can get prospects for Carlos Correa.
Yeah.
We'll pay him for half a season, and we'll get prospects for him. Guess what team has a ton of prospects to give up for Carlos Correa if you need him on July 15th?
But here's the problem with that, Dick. Are we okay with moving J.P. Crawford to second base?
Well, we got to be okay. Well, he keeps booting balls, we are. we are. I've really been thinking about roster construction lately.
Yeah.
And I'm glad we're seeing it in the NBA. I mean, look at Phoenix, Booker, Ayton drafted. Steph, Clay, and Poole, all drafted by Golden State. Giannis drafted by Milwaukee. Embiid drafted. Maxey drafted by Philadelphia. I could go on and on and on. These teams are starting to win with their homegrown guys, and then they bring free agents in to supplement. Everybody's in their cars right now. What about the Rams? Okay, the Rams got it done. Thanks to Jaquiski Tartt dropping an interception, or they wouldn't have been in the play. It wouldn't even have been in the Super Bowl. Yes, they got it done. But are the Rams built for sustainable success doing that?
No.
I want the Mariners to be built for sustainable success. I want the Seahawks to be built for sustainable success. I want the Husky football and basketball team to be built for sustainable success. 320 here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM. We have gotten through the first six picks of our mock draft. We have gone through the country to get the first six picks. We got to get pick 7 and 8. Why is that important? Because the Hawks have pick 9. So we need all 8 picks up through the Seahawks pick, and we will do that coming up. Paul Dottino, Giants beat reporter and host for MSG and WFAN. We'll talk Giants football. Sharon Thorson from WBT and the Panthers Radio Network coming up next right here. Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM, Softy and Dick.
The best NFL draft coverage in town kicks off April 28th, live from the VMAC. Brought to you by Hunt Services, Lakeland Village Golf Course, Hendrickas Organic, Chambers Bay Distillery, Half Lion Brewing Company, and Fox 13. Now back to Softy and Dick on Seattle's sports leader, Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Softy and Dick without the soft one on a Friday, and Softy picked a good day to be out on the links. Rain cleared up in the morning. It's not bad at all. Text line's open at 49451. The talk back line is open on the iHeartRadio app. We'll get some of those in the 345 segment. Question for you, I'll throw out. Do you agree with my take on free agency that I gave you last segment and how to build a roster? Am I way off? You should just spend, and get it done as quick as you possibly can. We'll throw that out on the talk back line on the iHeartRadio app and 49451 as well. And what exactly are the Hawks doing? What R-word are they doing? They're not rebuilding, right, according to Pete Carroll? So what are they doing? I mean, are they resetting? Are they reshuffling? Are they retooling? I mean, give me an R-word that the Hawks are in the middle of right now. Speaking of retooling or rebuilding, the New York Football Giants have been doing that for quite a long time, and Paul Dottino joins us, Giants beat reporter, host for MSG and WFAN. Paul, how you doing?
Good to talk to you again. Thanks for the time.
Not a problem. And the fifth and sixth picks we're going to talk about right now leading up to the Hawks pick at number 9. And the Giants with the 5 spot. And, you know, I'm looking. It even shocked me when I looked back at the Giants' resume over the last 9 years. Only one winning season. 22-59 since their last playoff appearance. I mean, this is a proud franchise that when I was growing up, I just expected them, you know, with Phil Sims, with Jeff Hostetler, I mean, with Jim Burton, that defensive line, I just expected them to be in the playoffs every single year. So what has happened over the last decade?
Well, obviously they made some bad free agent decisions. They drafted poorly. And then the third part of that equation, which can't be ignored, and people like to say, well, you know, you can't use it as an excuse, but it's documented history. Over the last 10 years, the Giants have lost more manpower games to injury than any team in the National Football League. In fact, I believe that number also includes the last 5 years, last 3 years, and I think they might have been one or two based on last year's injury manpower games lost. So that you can't ignore it. I mean, I get it. That's happenstance, but it is part of it. And somehow, some way, they've got to find a way to keep guys on the field. And what I tell people all the time is that number's bad enough, but you have to take into account who was lost to those injured games. You know, if you lose the 49th player on your roster, five-man power games, who cares?
Right.
But like last year, you lose your starting quarterback halfway through the season. That's a problem. You lose Saquon Barkley, you know, a couple years ago for the season. That's a problem. Who cares if it's the special teams gunner? So it's not just that the number is incredibly high for this team, but it's happened to too many of their major components.
And Daniel Jones, you're referring to, and how much leash does this guy have left? I mean, he was a high draft pick, obviously, and are there still believers there amongst the fan base and, more importantly, amongst the front office that still think he is the guy?
Players within the building and people, front office, coaches, scouts, they still believe that this year, his last year of really trying to prove himself, is going to work out well. The fan base has already started to turn. Mm-hmm. There's no question about it. They've already started to lose their patience, and there's a segment of this fan base that just can't wait for this season to be over so that they can hopefully look at Daniel Jones as a failure and watch him get shipped out. And that's, you know, but it's New York. I mean, that's just the way it is here. You know, but come on. These people wanted to get rid of Phil Simms, and look how that turned out. They wanted to get rid of Eli Manning after 3 years. How'd that work out? People just got to, you know, sit tight and enjoy the pizza for a little while.
is he without question the starter going into camp, or will there be a legitimate competition with Tyrod Taylor?
No. There's no competition here.
Okay.
Tyrod Taylor was signed to be the backup and only the backup. Davis Webb was also brought in to also be the third-string quarterback. But remember now, he was with Brian Daboll back in Buffalo. And so what you have is Joe Shane, the former Buffalo GM, who was there when Tyrod Taylor led the Bills to breaking their playoff drought several years ago. So you've got this Buffalo contingent between the GM and the head coach who have brought in two of their Buffalo guys who they feel comfortable with, saying, look, you guys are going to make sure that Daniel gets it right. And the ownership has made it clear that this is Daniel's team. He is going to get one final shot with every single piece of support that they can give him to see if he deserves to be the long-term guy. I don't think they're going to shortchange him. Now, having said that, they may not pick up his fifth-year option next month simply because, let me ask you this, he's gone 3 seasons in the league. Never played a full season, been hurt each and every year. Can you guarantee a player a fifth-year option and a $21 or $22 million contract for next year, not knowing if he's even going to get through a healthy season this year?
No.
The answer is probably no, right?
Absolutely not. All right, Paul, the weight of the Giants' future is on your shoulders. You have the fifth pick. Aiden Hutchinson has gone to Jacksonville in our, what do we call it? The softy, dicky, feltsy mock draft.
Right.
Is that what we're calling it? Trayvon Walker went to Detroit. Evan Neal went to Houston. And Kayvon Thibodeaux went to the Jets. Your pick number five, Paul.
You just may be the happiest person on the East Coast because Ike Ekwonu is wearing big blue.
All right. Ike Ekwonu goes at number five. Thank you very much. Appreciate it, Paul.
You got it.
All right. You bet. That's Paul DeTino taking Ike Ekwonu, number five. And now we go to number six. Our friend Sharon Thorsland from WBT and Charlotte Panthers radio reporter. Sharon, how are you this Friday?
I'm great, thanks. How are you doing?
I'm doing well, and it seems like, you know, the same questions that could be asked of Paul DeTino in New York can be asked of you in Carolina, and it starts with the quarterback position. I mean, I thought Sam Darnold might just work there. Get him out of New York, it might just work there. Why didn't it?
Well, a combination of things. First of all, his main weapon in Christian McCaffrey was injured most of the season. Second of all, the offensive line was just absolutely horrific, and he just had very little time to throw and make decisions, and when he was rushed, he made bad decisions. So really a combination of those two things were his biggest problem.
And then Matt Rhule, I mean, the seats on the heat scale, I mean, are we talking about 9.9, or is it, does he have to win 8-9 games this year and show significant improvement, or he's done?
I would think so. I mean, this is definitely his last season in town, I would think, if he doesn't do something. We've had a very strange season and off season where David Tepper, our owner, has not spoken at all. We've heard absolutely nothing from him. No word on Matt Rhule on any situation whatsoever. So it's been a little strange, but a popular thought is that if Matt Rhule doesn't make the playoffs and make at least some significant progress this year, that he's got to be out because his system just is not working so far. And that's the situation with the quarterbacks is really what the big problem is. I mean, you have this quarterback change every year, and it looks like it's going to be a quarterback change again this year. They can't figure out what they want to do. They start with Teddy Bridgewater, then bring in Sam Darnold, and now, we don't want Sam Darnold. We, want to try and trade for anybody. Baker Mayfield's still out there, and they just can't figure out what they want to do with the quarterback situation, and that, I think, has been his biggest problem.
Why did Ben McAdoo say that Sam Darnold was his starter last week and then 30 seconds later say, whoops?
Because the way the question was phrased was, who's your starting quarterback right now? There's only two quarterbacks on the team right now. You have Sam Darnold and P.J. Walker.
Right.
So, and he backtracked and said, whoops, no, maybe not. So he probably realizes he wasn't supposed to say that right now because Sam Darnold currently, yes, would be our starter because there is nobody else. But I'm assuming they're going to attempt to remedy that situation, just like I said, because they can't settle in on one quarterback. And you first blamed it on Teddy, now you blame it on Sam. And, of course, you had Cam Newton here last year for a while. So I would not be surprised one bit if they go out and draft a quarterback at number six, but I really hope they don't.
All right. Well, now's your chance because you get to draft for him. And Aiden Hutchinson's gone. Trevon Walker's gone. Evan Neal, Kayvon Thibodeau, and Ike Ekwonu are gone. You have your pick of the litter, including any quarterback you want.
Yes, I just heard the Ike Ekwonu. I was like, no, that's my pick. I think they need offensive line desperately. They need a left tackle desperately. They need somebody to come in and shore up that offensive line. So I'm going to go Charles Cross with this one, even though I think they might go Malik Willis. But I'm going Charles Cross.
Well, yeah, you know what? I'm going to stick with – I'm going to trust you more than I trust the Panthers front office to draft, all right?
That's probably not a bad idea.
Hey, thank you very much, Sharon. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
You bet. Charles Cross from Sharon Thorsland, the offensive tackle from Mississippi State. So two offensive tackles going in the softy, dicky, feltsy mock draft here. So we got Aiden Hutchinson from Fat Tony Smith in Jacksonville. We've got Trevon Walker, the edge from Georgia, going to our man Matt Derry in Detroit. Evan Neal, the left tackle, Alabama. From our man Matt Thomas, the voice of the Houston Rockets and talk show host in Houston. Cousin Evan, Softy's Cousin Evan, took Kayvon Thibodeau, which was an interesting choice at number three, the edge from Oregon. And then our picks today, Paul Dottino takes Ike Ekwonu for the Giants, the tackle from North Carolina State, and Sharon Thorsland takes Charles Cross, the offensive tackle from Mississippi State. Who's your pick? I'll share my pick with you coming up in the next segment. The guy that I've kind of settled on. And now, not that he's the only guy I want, but I find him as a safe pick. Who's your pick? 49451? Is there a guy that stands out? What's your free agent opinion? Do you agree with me, what I gave you in the first segment, or do you think I'm absolutely crazy? 49451 and some talk back as well on the iHeartRadio app. Dick Fain, it's Softy and Fain without the soft one here on Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM.
Now back to Crackin' Game Day with Softy and Dick. Brought to you by Smartsheet. What's hybrid work? It's having the people, the resources, and the total freedom to manage everything your way from wherever you are. And that's Smartsheet, the platform for dynamic work.
Four nine 4951 is the text line. I'll be reading some of those. Who do you want in this draft? Do you agree or disagree with my take on free agency / transfers that I threw out in the first segment? Of those that didn't hear, just the Cliff Notes version is simply this. I am not and never have been a fan of going out and getting the highest priced free agent available in really any sport. And the Seahawks I've agreed absolutely with the Seahawks' disdain for doing that. I mean, that's not understating it. They have a disdain for getting the highest price free agent. I've seen it time and time again. What are the teams that get the highest price free agents? Jets, the Giants, Dolphins. I mean, you heard Paul DeTino in the last segment. I go, what's been the Giants' problem the last 10 years? Oh, they missed on high-priced free agents. I mean, that's what he said. It was like a perfect. It was a perfect transition from my 3 o'clock segment. And the Mariners are doing the same thing. And I know a lot of people are upset. I've heard it from Softy. I've heard it from folks down at Jimmy's. Why didn't Jerry DePoto spend? Why didn't he spend? Well, I mean, those guys that he was going to spend on, I gave you the numbers. Only Chris Bryant's doing any good.
Well, and also it takes two to tango.
Correct.
Right from Jerry's mouth last week, right?
Correct.
It takes two to tango.
It takes two to tango. No question about that. So throw that out on us at 49451 on the text line. Here's one from the 253. Dick, you're primarily correct. I guess that's better than not being correct at all, right? DePoto says he was looking for second base, third base, and left field and secured the talent he wanted without spending 10x, which is what a good GM should do. I have got very little problem with how Jerry DePoto has run this franchise for the last 5 years. Very, very little problem. I would say the one little bit that I'm not fond of is his timing, I think, can be criticized, yeah. Right? His timing of bringing up Jared Kelenic at the beginning of last year. His timing of bringing up Julio Rodriguez. And I promise you, I know I was not here for the 9 shows leading up to the beginning of the season. I promise you, I would have been on the air saying, Julio should not be on this baseball team. Because that's what I was thinking all through the end of March. And I was like, he was tearing the ball up in spring training, a shortened spring training. I was like, oh no, they're going to do this, aren't they? They're going to bring him up just like they did with, you know, Kelenic. It took him 6 weeks because of the whole, you know, the whole not wanting to burn an extra year of him. But it's not working in the early going for these guys. Give me your draft guy. Here's a couple on 49451. Two voting for Sauce Gardner. If Sauce is there, get him at number 9. Here's my guy, Jackson, and okay. I'm with you. I do not think the Seattle Seahawks are going to be selecting the number 9 pick. And right. I would even be okay with them taking this guy at number 9, but I don't think they're going to have to take this guy at number 9. I think he's going to be there at 12,
okay.
13, maybe even 15.
What do you got?
Before I give you the name,
okay.
I'm going to tell you my logic.
Drum roll, do I have to wait for this?
My reasoning.
The anticipation is high.
This is not necessarily a position of need.
Okay.
But you know what? I don't care. I don't care about what this team does this year. I care whether this team is ready to compete for a playoff spot in 2023 and a Super Bowl in 2024.
Fair.
That's what I care about.
Yeah, okay.
So what you need right now isn't what you're going to need in 2024.
Right.
Give me 6'6", 340, oh. Nose tackle that runs a 4.78 40-yard dash that played at Georgia against Alabama and Florida and LSU and the SEC for multiple years. Give me Jordan Davis, the defensive tackle out of Georgia. What do you think about that? And trading down maybe more than once. Maybe you trade down twice and you still get this guy at 14 or 15.
Well, first off, I hate it.
All right.
I'm going to tell you that already.
All right.
I think it's a terrible pick.
Okay.
Secondly, it's Sauce Gardner. And if it's not Sauce Gardner, then it's the other quarterback.
I don't think he's going to be there, though. That's
Right. So if it's not him, then you got to get a cornerback. Because not only is it a need right now, it's going to be a need in 2-3 years. Because I don't anticipate that they're going to be able. And clearly, the NFL's figured out, oh, this is how we draft cornerbacks. Pete Carroll changed the way NFL looks at cornerbacks, right?
Yep.
So now that that's changed, you have to draft cornerbacks high. Those guys are exactly what you want. And listening to Daniel Jeremiah week in and week out talk to you guys about Gardner, yes, he's the dream. And if he's not there, I still want a top cornerback. We need one. We desperately need one, losing DJ Reed, to get back in this system, to get that secondary back to where it needs to be.
I'm with you on Sauce. I might even trade up a spot for Sauce. I like him so much. I just don't think he's going to be there. I don't even think he's be there at 9. We'll ask the expert, Michael Sean Dugar from The Athletic, who also does a radio show on this fine radio station. Did you know that? From 9 to 11 on Saturdays with Christopher Kidd. We'll talk to him next after Top of the Hour Headlines on Sports Radio 93.3 KJR FM.
Now from the Star Rentals Sports Desk, your 93.3 KJR FM Sports Headlines.
Sports Headlines at 4 o'clock, brought to you by Buddy's goodies and glass. It's always 420 at Buddy's. Kraken looking for their fourth straight win tonight. They're on fire. They take on the Wild in Minnesota. Face off at 5. Pregame with Mike Benton at 4:30 right here on 93.3 KJRFM. Defenseman Riker Evans, the Kraken's second round pick, has signed a contract with the team. How about the other Minnesota team, the basketball version, the T-Wolves, just flat out blew it. The largest blown fourth quarter road travesty in the history of the NBA playoffs. They were up 21 points with under a minute left in the third quarter and lost to the Grizzlies. Ja Morant, first triple-double in Grizz playoff history. Mavs took a 2-1 series lead despite missing Luka Doncic, as Jalen Brunson had another great night with 31 points. He's averaging 30 in the series. Warriors cruise to another win. Charlotte Hornets have fired head coach James Borrego after a pretty decent season, actually, 43-39. Earl Thomas, who turns 33 years old next month, says he wants to resume his NFL career. Bucks have restructured Tom Brady's contract, saving $9 million under the cap. Wazoo president Kirk Schultz says he absolutely has no interest in the Big 12 commissioner's post he was rumored for. And how about this from the PGA Tour? 68-year-old Jay Haas has just made history as the oldest player ever to make the cut in a PGA Tour event. Jay is paired with his son, Bill, in this week's Zurich Classic in Louisiana.
This is Kraken Game Day, brought to you by Smartsheet. What's hybrid work? It's having the people, the resources, and the total freedom to manage everything your way, from wherever you are. And that's Smartsheet, the platform for dynamic work. Now with Kraken Game Day, here's Softy and Dick.
Softy and Dick without the soft one today. He'll be back on Monday. We do have 5 p.m. Ice 4:30 pregame with Mike Benton right here on 93.3 KJRFM. But first, we got to talk some Seahawk football with our friend Michael Shandugar from The Athletic. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm good. I just told Jackson I just woke up from a nap. I'm fully replenished. I'm ready to roll with you. Let's do it.
Sounds good. And you got early morning tomorrow, right? Because you're going to be on the radio station tomorrow with Chris. Tell us about the show.
Yeah, no, the hype with Chris and Mike. You know, Chris and I, we're super hyped to have the show, no pun intended. We spent a good few hours coming up with the name, so I really hope everyone likes that. Like, because you guys, I don't know how it works at KJR, how you guys all just had names that made sense with each other. You know, Chuck and Buck, you know, Ian's by himself, Jim and Puckett. Like, it just kind of came together, you know, you and Softy. There was no way we could string together Michael, Sean, and Christopher in a smooth way. Could not do it. Our last names didn't do it. It took us way too long. So I'm glad we actually finally got a name for the damn show.
I like the hype. It'll be on at 9 o'clock tomorrow on 93.3 KJRFM. So let's start with DK. Obviously, that's been the biggest story the last couple weeks. Why is DK in camp when his contemporaries like Debo, AJ, and Terry McLaurin, who are in very similar situations as he is, not in camp?
I just think that's who DK is. You know, remember, this is the guy, DK Metcalf, who, I forget when the interview he revealed it with, maybe with Kevin Garnett it was, this offseason, says that in week 4, I think it was the Friday before they played the 49ers, he hurt his foot. And then he goes to the doctors, and they say, hey, man, you kind of got like a fracture in your foot. And he's like, oh, that's it? I'm just going to keep playing the rest of the year. Mm. Right? So that dude, you know, and that's probably ill-advised. Right? He probably shouldn't have done that. He could have really, really, really broke his foot pretty bad and didn't. But he wanted to be out there for his teammates. He wanted to be involved. You know, he still practiced twice a week last season, only took off Thursdays. So, like, that dude coming to off-season programs voluntarily, like, it doesn't surprise me when you think about the context of who DK is.
How's his foot coming along?
It hasn't fallen off, so that's good.
That's good.
doesn't appear to be fully broken. I don't think he had – I'm not sure. I asked Pete Carroll this Thursday, like, what exactly happened. Pete used a really vague term and said he had something cleaned up, which really does not help. It's like the least helpful thing Pete Carroll does is say that something was cleaned up in reference to an injury. But as far as I can tell, he's expected to be, like, available for training camp and definitely should be available week 1. I don't think they're really in danger of not having any starters other than, like, Chris Carson. I think Rashad Penny should be good to go. Quandre Diggs from his foot surgery. Jamal Adams from the million shoulder surgeries that he's had. My understanding is everybody should be good to roll.
Softy mentioned this last week that if he were DK, he'd sit out. He'd be like, hey, I'm not going to risk further injury. I'm going to sit out. I'm going to pull the Debo. I'm going to pull the A.J. Brown, the McLaurin. Would you sit out if you were DK?
I probably would. Yeah, just like me, Mike, just kind of protect. My body is all I have, right? And if it's voluntarily, it's also, it depends on where I'm from, too. Like, I'm from Seattle, so it's a little bit weird. But, like, some of these guys are from warm weather cities. So if I have to come to Seattle and it's, like, gloomy and rainy, it's like, I'll just train at home near my mom and her cooking or my grandparents and, if I got kids, I'd get to be closer to my kids for a little bit longer before I just basically abandon them for a few months. So there's a lot of factors, actually, why guys sit out. But, like, me personally, I would just want to protect my body. But I think this offseason showed us there's no one way to do it. You know, Devontae Adams said, I want to be the highest paid receiver in the league, and I won't settle for anything but that. Right? Cooper Kupp came out and said, I don't care if I'm the highest paid receiver in the league. And both of those things are okay.
I want to preface what I'm about to say with, I love DK Metcalf. He's a freak show. We all know that. But, right, there's always the but. If the Seahawks could get Tyreek Hill value for DK Metcalf, which I thought was insanity by the Miami Dolphins, personally, especially since they don't have a quarterback that he can throw the ball 50 yards downfield to Tyreek Hill. Should the Hawks investigate that if they could get Tyreek Hill value for DK Metcalf?
I mean, they probably don't have to investigate it. I'm sure they'd probably get a better package. When Tyreek was traded for, what was that, like a late first and a second and maybe some more, you know, DK can probably go for like a top 10 pick. Honestly, anybody who would consider taking a receiver in the top 15 picks would probably just take DK and pay him $100 million over 4 years. I think the problem with that, it goes beyond the economics of the situation. Because you're right. Like, you do have to consider the money and how that factors in and the right. trade value, whatever. Like, no one's off the board once you trade Russell. My thing is that it'd be really hard to sell that you are not rebuilding if you trade DK Metcalf. Like, the coaches in there who are trying to rise in their careers. Like, if they're on a team that goes 4-13, what happens to them next January? Same thing with a lot of those veterans in there who signed up to ram their heads into other guys for 17 weeks. Are they going to be willing to do that every week if they don't feel like they're on a franchise that's invested in winning right now? Right. So it's the optics of the situation, really, and it goes beyond just whether you get a lot of picks or save a lot of money when you get rid of a certain guy.
Should they feel like they're invested in winning right now? I mean, is this a team in your mind that can compete for a playoff spot?
No, it's not. But then again, you're not asking me to run into other offensive linemen every Sunday, right? And wake and barely be able to get out of bed Monday morning, right? Like, you have to factor in the human side of this. Like, you'll lose your locker room, I think. This is just my theory. Okay. You'll lose guys like Quandre Diggs. You'll lose Uchenna. I mean, those guys are professional, but, like, they signed up here thinking they can win. Now, whether that's valid or not doesn't really matter because they signed up thinking that, right? And if Dwayne Brown comes back, he'll come back thinking that you're trying to win. You trade 23-year-old superstar DK Metcalf away for some picks just to take another 22-year-old who's unproven.
Right.
That's a hard sell. And the coach thing matters, too. Like, these guys are kind of trying to rise in their careers. Right? They'll know they'll be jobless, too, if they're on a team that's trying to lose. There's a lot of factors that goes into, you know, just trading a star for picks.
I do feel that John Schneider, Michael Schoendugar from The Athletic, and also our radio show tomorrow at 9 o'clock with Chris Kidd here on 93.3 KJRFM joining us here. And John Schneider, obviously, you know, he put on the great face yesterday, and I do believe there is some authentic excitement that John Schneider kind of feels like, all right, I got draft picks again, I can do what I love the most. The comment that he made, though, about how refreshing everything was yesterday, did you take that at all as kind of a slight dig at Russell Wilson when you heard it, when he just talked about how just wonderful everything is at the VMAC?
Yeah, it kind of felt like that, didn't it? I don't think it did. I don't think that John meant it that way. Like, he probably is really, like, genuinely excited and refreshed. It's just so weird, A, that it did feel like, okay, we got three, and all that comes with having three in the building up out of here, so let's kind of reset things, and we can kind of just be in control. That's what it sounded like. It's like, all right, we're running things now again. Yeah. Like, if you notice at the end of that comment before Pete jumped in, John said, we're concentrated on people again. And then Pete talked, and I didn't get a chance to get John to clarify. I was like, what the hell does that mean? Like, what were you doing the last few years if you weren't concentrated on people? It was very strange comment. I wish I could have got him to clarify. But yeah, all of that just sounded very odd. And the second reason it sounds odd is because, I mean, yeah, last year they had 3 picks, but they've had 7, 8 picks in a draft. They've had picks before.
Yeah.
Is it just because they have pick 9? I don't. It was very weird, you know, that they kind of feel so juiced and refreshed as if they've never had assets or resources to try to better the team.
It almost seems to me like there's a sense of relief because, not that Russell's gone, because obviously they're not a better team without Russell Wilson, but relief that they don't have to make that decision on whether to give him $55 million a year when he's 35, 36, 37 years of age. Do you feel, is relief a good word to describe it?
I'm not sure. It depends because, like, yeah, you can feel real relieved on having a cheaper quarterback until that quarterback goes out there and stinks up.
That's right.
Right. Like, I think that, like, Pete, when you ever hear Pete talk about Geno Smith and you notice, like, put it this way, look at the two sample sizes they try to sell us on their current quarterbacks, right? Pete always mentions with Geno, he's been here a while and he cooked the Jaguars. And then John, when I talk about Drew Locke, it's like, yeah, you know, he had a bad situation in Denver, but was really good for 5 games in 2019. Those sample sizes stink. Like, that's nothing to write home about, right? So, yeah, they probably – I told somebody this before. I was like, you know, right now it is super – and I selfishly say this. It's super refreshing kind of not having to deal with the Russell stuff, right? Not having to write little blogs because sure. He did some quirky thing online or he debuted some new voice that may or not be sexy or authentic on a date with Sierra that he let the world see via Instagram. Like, we don't have to care about that stuff anymore, and that's kind of nice. But boy, once games start, I'm probably going to miss Russell. I'm going to miss the hell out of Russell, you know, come September. Because if corny, cheesy, maybe a little annoying, political, who cares? He could throw the football. And I think that fans, media, players, coaches, front office, everyone who kind of felt like I'm feeling, boy, we're going to feel really, we're going to miss the hell out of Russ, boy, come time to play some games.
Agreed. And but what's the end game when it comes to the quarterback salary? I was looking at it the other day, Mike. The last 5 years, the NFL salary cap has gone up 20% in 5 years. The average of the top 5 quarterback salaries has gone up almost 50% in the last 5 years. That is obviously not just by math says that's not sustainable. So what's the end game here with quarterback salaries?
I think that from the economics of the game, as you're kind of referencing, it's interesting for quarterbacks because even though, like, in theory, you could do this, right? Like, you could be the Ravens. Let's take the Ravens, for example. All right, we get 5 years out of Lamar Jackson, and we tag him for that 6th year. Maybe we even tag him for that 7th year, and then we just don't pay him, right? And we just draft the next kid from whoever, and then we run that kid into the ground for 5, 6 years while he's on, like, a team-friendly contract, and we wash, rinse, and repeat. Like, in theory, that is doable, and I do think one very bold franchise is going to try that. Mm-hmm. Right? You have to have the job security to try that, which makes it tricky as well. You have to be really plugged in with ownership.
It might be the Ravens. Yeah, I think you might have nailed it with the Ravens.
they could. Yeah. No, that's very plausible, I think, for the Ravens to do that. I don't think they will, but they could. The issue with that is, A, quarterbacks are still scarce in terms of where you can acquire them. Right? Like, receivers, I think, that market is going to freeze. Why? Because you can find a Pro Bowl caliber guy with pick 75 regularly.
Yep.
Like, you can just regularly do that at receiver, at running back, at tight end, at offensive guard, center. You can do that at those positions, which is why those markets can freeze after a little bit. All of the franchise quarterbacks are basically first-round picks. It's like 80% or something like that. And then every year, no matter how good these kids get from 7-on-7 camps and training and spread offenses, the best guys are still the ones who go in the first round. Until that changes, I think, people are going to be too scared to just bet on first-round guys every year in the draft and get rid of a star, right? Because there's only, 4 or 5 guys that really come out that are worth a damn anyway.
Right.
And if you can't get one of those guys and you just roll out some scrub, some bridge guy, well, then you can get fired. So I do think you're right. The economics of it make it so that the market should freeze eventually, but there's still a scarcity at the position.
So what are they going to do with that first pick? Are they going to take somebody at 9, or are they going to try to move down?
Well, they just better get it right, whatever it is.
What's right in your mind? What's right in your mind?
Somebody who, a stud. I mean, like, all pro potential. Like, I think that it's hard to quantify what a draft pick should be based on its positional value. Like, hey, what should the 27th pick turn into? We can argue that all day. Like, maybe that's whatever Jordan Brooks turns into is like, all right, that's what you can get out of it. The ninth pick, though, I think we all agree that should be a stud. Right? It should be an all-pro guy, a guy that's a no-brainer. Like, after year two or three, you're like, wow, we need to budget for giving this guy a lot of money. That's kind of the new barometer I have. Like, is this a good draft pick? Yes. How do I know? Because I'm already thinking about how much his second deal is going to cost the team.
Right, you know, but not every draft is created equal, and it just doesn't seem like nine in this draft is necessarily equivalent to nine in other drafts. It just doesn't seem as good. Am I wrong about that?
I mean, it feels that way, but I feel like every draft, whether it's a COVID year or whatever, I mean, look how many studs from that last draft that sat out for a year came in here balling. Think like Micah Parsons, like Jamar Chase. Yeah. Like, there's always going to be a dude. Like, even in a terrible first-round draft, like the 2013 class, right, that still had, I think, DeAndre Hopkins in it or something like that. Like, there were still ballers in all of these classes that are underwhelming, quote-unquote. You just got to find the guy. And I like putting that pressure on the front office because John Schneider will tell you, we spent 11 months preparing for the draft damn near. They make millions of dollars. All right, man, then get it right. I don't feel bad for you. So, yeah, I think getting it right at nine means picking a dude who right away – is that dude.
You got a guy that you like?
I have three.
Okay.
I have four. I have four that I like. Sauce Gardner from Cincinnati, yep. The cornerback. I like Derek Stingley Jr., the cornerback from LSU. I like Kayvon Thibodeau, the edge rusher from Oregon. And I like Desmond Ridder, actually, Cincinnati quarterback. Yeah, I think those guys all feel very like plug and play ready for me. I think the two linemen, Icky from NC State and Evan Neal from Alabama, do as well. I just don't think they'll be there, so I'm just kind of scratching them from the list. But those four guys, I feel like all have potential to be there at nine, and any of those guys should be a plug and play dude for Seattle.
Let's say they love Ridder like you do. Should they just grab him at nine, or should they get a little greedy and say, I think we can get Ridder at like 17 and try to move down? Man,
I see the argument for doing the latter, right? And then from, again, I keep saying the word economics. My teachers would be so proud. But yes, economics of the situation would say yes, right, because that's better value. But I don't think, and I tell my friends this all the time, you can't reach for a quarterback. There's no such thing to me. The positional value is too great. It doesn't matter if you have a third-round grade on, you know, Ridder or Sam Howell or whatever, because if you try to wait, well, Pittsburgh might have a first-round grade on them, you dummies. So just take your guy. Right, and there's no one's going to be mad you took a quarterback at insert spot, right? It's not like running back. Like, there was no way to justify the Saquon Barkley pick for the Giants. But if they had took a quarterback at two, you can always justify a quarterback at two if he's the guy. So, yes, the short version is if you like a guy and he's your franchise guy, you can literally take him with any slot in the first round. Quarterbacks and left tackles and edge rushers are unique in that way. You're never reaching for the guy if he ends up being a franchise cornerstone.
Great stuff, man. What do you got on the show tomorrow at 9 a.m.?
Well, I'm going to, like, say all that again, right? So just save that audio,
okay.
And I even got to come into work, right?
That's
right. Just play that. Play Chris's voice in there, and then boom. Actually, I might have just thought of something great. I can go back to sleep, actually.
Beautiful. We'll be listening.
That'd be great.
We'll be listening, man. We appreciate it.
Appreciate you having me, man. Peace. Peace.
You bet. Michael Sean Dugar. Yes, you can hear him tomorrow along with Chris Kidd, and he's just going to replay that 20-minute segment and put it on at 9 a.m. There's his guys. He's like Jackson. I like Sauce Gardner, too. I just don't think he's going to be there at 9. But Desmond Ridder is – I'll tell you, I wouldn't be disappointed. I'd be a little bit if they got him at 9, but if they traded down and accumulated picks and still got Desmond Ridder – I'd be okay with that.
Sounds good.
I'd be absolutely okay with that. Is it hockey time, Jackson Feltz? Is it hockey time?
It's time.
The red freaking hot Seattle Kraken. I went to their last game. They're looking for their fourth straight win. They take on the Wild in Minnesota. And we got Michael Benton coming up right now for pregame on Sports Radio 93.3 KJRFM.